You know what that means? You're tuned into Everything Under the Sun weekly radio Sober Sun's weekly radio show, Thursdays at 4. I am your host, Cecilia Benavides. I'm here with...
James Steinler. Thank you so much, your co-host, and so happy to be here. Thanks for hosting again today, Yesenia.
Of course.
And today we also have a special guest. We will be talking about Page 5 story, New Muddy Meter Aims to Mitigate Erosion of Red Hill Trails. Very important topic, and we have a Red Hill Council member, Mr. Chris Brandt, with us today. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for doing the good work to keep Red Hill intact for our generation and for future generations.
You're welcome.
Fantastic. And folks, in case you haven't already picked up a copy of the Sober Sun, a brand new one has hit the stands and is ready for your perusal at a yellow newspaper bin nearest you. You can also find us online at SoberSun.com. And in case you missed it last week, we had a great Sweet 16 birthday party for the Sober Sun, celebrating 16 years of delivering the news. And you were there, weren't you, Yesenia?
Yes, I was.
Did you have a good time?
Yes, I really enjoyed it.
There was good food. There was and the best people, right?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Silent auction.
A silent auction. Did you bid on anything?
No.
The Sober Sun did really well with ticket sales and with the silent auction. So thank you to our community members who came out to support us. And thank you to our community members who couldn't make it but are there in our hearts always. Every step of the way through challenges and successes. Anyhow, without further ado, let's talk a little bit about Red Hill and this new muddy meter. First, though, let's, Chris, if you don't mind, we'll get a little bit of background.
Sure.
Can you tell us when the Red Hill Council was formed?
It was starting to form or organize in the late 90s. I think 1996 is when the group started coming together, and it became an official nonprofit at the stroke of midnight on Y2K 2000.
Oh, my gosh. That is quite a story. Now, this was before your time, because before we came on the air today, you said you moved to the Valley about 16 years ago?
Yeah, 2009 is when I first came to the Valley.
Okay, but Y2K, and that's when the Red Hill Council officially launched.
That's true.
Taking care of those foot trails on Red Hill that are so commonly used.
Yeah, I would say it's the most popular, if not maybe the second most popular trail destination in the Valley. It's pretty popular.
It's extremely convenient, just a quick jaunt over 82. I imagine some people don't even drive there if they're Carbondalians.
Yeah, you're looking at it all day long from the town. It looks bright and sunny and dry from a distance, and it's a, kind of a beacon that's attracting you. It's an impressive place to come to.
Absolutely. And I know that we had a little bit of a discussion before our interview today. I do want to give a shout out, though, before I get too far into it, to our stellar reporter Annalise Guetter, who wrote the story that we're covering on today's show. But people have been using those trails far longer than even 2000.
Yeah, as far as I know, and I've heard there's been social trails up there for quite some time. I mean, the Native Americans used the resource. It's an important special place. Amazing views of the valley, looking at the convergence of the Crystal River and the Roaring Fork, and you know, obviously the magnificent Mount Sopris in the distance.
Wonderful. And could you speak to as to why the Red Hill Council was formed?
Well, I guess the mission was really about protecting the place. One of the primary objectives was to protect it from being mined for oil and gas, extracting
really?
The resource. So
okay.
That was a critical step, is getting it designated as a special resource management area with the BLM.
Okay, wonderful. And whereas it wasn't the case, it wasn't under BLM jurisdiction before?
It was under BLM, but it wasn't managed as a special recreation management area, so that brings with it certain restrictions about what can happen with resource extraction.
Okay. And let's see here. Do you think, like, with the formation of the council, and while it was meant to protect the those trails, did some maintenance also go into that, which led to more use?
Well, as the trails evolved, I think they became more popular. Mountain biking became more popular at that era. It's always been seen as an extremely challenging recreational destination, just due to the steep terrain and topography and the rocky conditions. But in the earlier days, the trail layouts were quite a bit different than they are now today. Yeah. And as we continue to work on the trails, they're evolving still to present times.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I maybe shouldn't admit this, but before the I used to kind of try to scurry up the face, which, like you said, is quite steep. And I would imagine that that's discouraged these days.
Yeah, that's kind of thought of as a goat trail. It's where you're basically hiking straight up the fall line, the most direct path. And a lot of people who hike do prefer that strategy. Hmm. Unfortunately, it is more vulnerable to soil erosion because of the way water moves across the land.
Okay. Let's see here. Okay, so let's get into... well, actually, how often do you think people are over there using the trails? I know we said it's a lot, but do we have any data on that or estimates?
We have trail counters mounted in various locations on the hill, and we use that to measure the volume of use.
Have those been up there for a while, or are those new?
Yeah, they've been up there for a while. When I first became involved with the council in 2011, the only counter that we had was a seismic counter at the old trailhead, so it was basically a wire and buried in a pipe on the ground. Now we have little boxes that measure their heat sensing, so they're basically measuring how many warm bodies are passing along the corridor.
Okay, great. So you get a more consistent count that way, and especially considering that there's a lot of different trails to take.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, we definitely analyze it carefully, and we collect a lot of data, and we use that to guide our management and our stewardship approach.
Okay, and so let's now, and the impetus for this article was to write about the new muddy meter, which aims to, again, mitigate erosion at Red Hill. When was that installed?
The mud meter was installed in the last month.
Okay.
We put in the steel posts last fall, and then we had to wait for some final fabrication modifications before we installed it on site. But, yeah, it's been up for probably 3 to 4 weeks now.
Okay. And can you tell us what is the intention of the mud meter?
Well, the primary reason is that we needed a tool that communicated when is it an appropriate time to visit or not. And we wanted to help give people information so that they can be educated or informed about when is the appropriate time, and also allow them to communicate to other trail users that they may have observed something that is a challenge or a problem, i.e. mud, and discourage others from visiting in those locations.
Okay. And on the board, there is three different sliding. What's the term for that?
Yeah, they're sliding arrows. So there's a range of good, moderate, poor conditions, and colored by red, yellow, green.
Okay.
Red being... what we call poor. Yeah, stop.
Green bingo.
Exactly. Yeah, pretty universal. There's a happy face, a sad face, you know, something that you don't even need to be able to read. You can get a sense of what it is.
Yeah.
But we divided the areas on the map into three zones, zone 1, 2, and 3. And those are three distinct areas that tend to hold the same characteristics throughout the year.
Okay, and is that because of exposure to the sun? Or?
Yeah, it's about sun exposure. It's about soil type. It's about how snowpack is retained and the rate at which it melts throughout the year, things like that.
Okay. Let's see here. This time of year, there tends to still be quite a bit of use up at Red Hill, you were saying before.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've reported roughly 75,000 annual users. If we were to divide that by 365 days in a year, that's 200 people a day, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
Our trail counter data shows that there's way more use in the spring when it's muddy and sensitive to damage, to the levels of 300 to 400 people per day. So that's a lot of people hitting it when it's muddy and they shouldn't be, and it's causing a lot of damage.
And even more so, it sounds like, than it's typical of other times of year.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, we get visitation all year long. When it's snowy, it's perfectly fine, frozen solid, great. Mm-hmm. There's those times of the year, though, when the snow starts to melt and the mud is revealed, and certain areas, one particular zone might be frozen and covered with snow and be perfectly fine to hike, while another might be melting out and becoming muddy.
Yeah, for sure. And so, sorry, I just lost my train of thought. That there, excuse me.
I have a question.
Yeah, please, okay. Go ahead.
I have a question, yes. When the soil, or when it's very muddy out there, how do you guys tell people who want to go hike there, or how do you guys advocate for it, like, to stay on the trail and make sure not to step off, because that can cause more
Absolutely,
harm.
Yeah. So we recommend that people always stay on the trail. So sometimes people are out on the trail and they get stuck and they realize, oh, it's super muddy now. Maybe it was frozen when I started, but now it's nasty. It's sticking to my shoes. We ask that people, if they're in that situation, just keep walking down the trail. Don't walk around the mud. Don't walk through the vegetation. Create a new shortcut. Mm-hmm. That ends up causing more problems. It widens the trail, and it just ends up creating a wider human-caused destruction zone. So our first message is don't show up if it is muddy, but if you get stuck, stay on the trail, please.
Yeah, and check out that meter before you head up there, because someone else has likely set the meter, letting you know if some trails are too muddy or those out of those three sections.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you were up hiking and found some mud and you returned to the trailhead and noticed the sign needed to be adjusted, please feel free to turn the arrow into the appropriate color and let other people know that it's not right. It's not a good time, and help prevent them from making the same mistakes.
And in the past, there has been some other outreach regarding limiting use during mud season.
Yeah, we've definitely been upping our education efforts every year. We're trying to promote a better user ethic in the community. We know that the majority of our users are locals, and a lot of them are hitting it every day. It's like a ritualistic habit every day, and some people feel a little bit entitled to be able to do that no matter what, but we're really asking people to rethink their pattern and help us protect the resource.
Absolutely. Yesenia, did you have a question?
Yes, I have a follow-up question to when people make the extend the pattern, the trails. Mm-hmm. How do you guys fix that, or do you guys just add it on?
Yeah, so we have been doing this approach for quite a while, this technique, which is really when people are walking up there, they see a trail that's been created by somebody else off trail, and they're really encouraged. It's like a subconscious instinct, like, oh, I want to follow that trail. I'm going to follow where somebody's walked before me.
Yeah.
And so we do a lot of work to make those go away as quickly as possible, and that means spreading woody debris, dead wood material, or we'll actually collect pine needles and spread it across the foot track and put rocks and place it so it doesn't look like anybody's walked there.
Yeah.
Is there any way to go back from erosion, though? And when there is, there has already been depredation over the land and on those trails during mud season.
We can't get the soil back. Sometimes in the trail when it erodes, we do take the soil that has eroded from the low points and we haul it back up and place it where it came from. And so we do some of that, but really once the land's been damaged, it takes a long time for it to recover. Nature does do its own thing and comes back and reclaims it if we can keep people out of those spaces. But some of the areas actually are composed of it's called a biologic soil crust or cryptobiotic soils.
Yeah,
you might have heard of that. And that's a kind of a bacterial colony, it's like a microorganism, kind of like moss, or a coral type crust. And that can take 20 to 200 years to reform. And so once it's compacted by human footsteps, it's pretty damaging. And that soil, the cryptobiotic soils are really important for holding the earth together and preventing erosion. And once that's broken loose, it does start to disappear very quickly.
And I imagine there is a lot more cryptobiotic soil up there. once there, upon a time.
there was, and I've seen it disappear in the time that I've been here.
Right.
And there are places further from the trailhead where it is largely intact and in really good shape.
Okay, so. Good. Well, that's great. Did you want to add something? Sorry.
Well, I think that onto that topic, that's one of the biggest reasons for why we encourage people to stay on the trail. Mm-hmm. And this includes your pet. When your dog is off leash, and you know anybody who hikes with their dog, or if you watch someone with their dog, a lot of the dogs are zigzagging around, wandering to and fro, and shortcutting. They wait for their owner to come around the switchback, and then they take the path of least resistance to get back to them. And you know, one little dog doesn't really make a big impact, but when you're seeing 100, 150, maybe 200 in a day, that does have a pretty big impact long term.
Mm-hmm. And they do like to dig dogs. They do. And I mean, that could be 200 years worth of soil development that they destroy within a matter of seconds.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a lot.
For our listeners,
you are tuned into Everything on the Sun, Super Sun's daily week. weekly radio show.
Right here on KDNK. And this week we are speaking with Chris Brandt of the Red Hill Council. Regarding the new mud meter at the base of Red Hill. Did you have another question, Yesenia?
Yes. have you guys had doubts that the hill is in risk of erosion or that the trails might be lost?
I think there's a lot of examples out there of resources that have been overused and they haven't been maintained, and the overuse hasn't been addressed, and that can very quickly turn into something that looks much different than it looks today. We put a lot of work into protecting it and stabilizing it and trying to keep the trails narrow and minimizing the damage. So I'm not concerned that the mountain's going to like wash away, but I am concerned that the ecological health of the space, the attractive aspects that people are drawn to.
The reason people want to go up there in the first place.
Yeah, those are definitely being impacted by the volume of use we're getting now, and it's of concern.
So the muddy meter's been there at the base of the trails for about a month.
Correct.
Have you been keeping an eye on it, seeing if people are using it and setting it?
I have seen it a couple times. I've been pretty busy with work lately, but I have definitely been monitoring it from a distance, and I've hiked up there a couple times and just asked people on the trail, have you seen it? What do you think about it? Mm-hmm. Do you understand how it works? And then just encouraging them to give it a try. And we've got pretty good feedback so far. People have been really appreciative. They feel like we're actually doing something to help prevent the problem. I think a lot of people are really aware of how much damage is occurring up there and want to do something to help.
That's great. Yeah. And it's great that it is an interactive thing that all trail users can use.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we don't have the resources or the time or the ability to be up there every day, checking the conditions and posting like a ski report kind of thing. Like it's really, we're trying to empower the users in our community to understand or develop a shared understanding for when is it appropriate and when is it not. When is it not an appropriate time to visit?
Right.
And then to be able to communicate to others what they're observing just to help.
And that red dirt up there, I mean, gets so muddy.
Absolutely.
And it seems like erosion just could, it's so susceptible to that already.
Yeah.
Are there even weeks when it's just like all of it might be at red and it's just like not a good week to use it? I imagine
absolutely.
Rainy days.
Absolutely. I mean, Ruthie's Run and the Mushroom Rock route it's the route that's right along the top of the cliff. It gets the most sun and it tends to dry out the fastest. And actually at the moment, it's probably mostly dry. And people who want to hike up there right now and want to do an out and back, coming back down the hill the same way they started, that's probably a safe thing to do right now. But those who are seeking a loop experience that involves other trails that head into the north-facing aspects of the forest, or Blue Ribbon Trail, Three Gulch Trail, you're going to end up running into mud. There's still a lot of snow up there and a lot of drainage that's going to happen still, and it's going to be wet for quite some time.
Okay. And Yesenia already asked my next question, so that's lovely. Thank you, Yesenia. And so why not institute a seasonal closure?
Well, Red Hill. Yeah, that's a great question. That would be the simple way to do it, and that's what a lot of local or jurisdictions in other areas would probably do to approach this. The resource, the SRMA, or the Special Resource Management Area designation by the BLM, is managed as open year-round. currently, and it's subject to change. They're open to considering a change, but they would like us to try first to educate our users and see if we can get people to change their behaviors before we start looking at implementing closure gates.
So it's really up to the people whether or not we'll be able to keep these trails open, and where there will be these days in the springtime where it's really hot and yep. nice, and those trails can be ethically traversable. Mm-hmm. But if not, and if they're not responsibly used, that's a possibility in the future.
Absolutely. It's definitely on the table, and we're in year three of a kind of an experiment right now where we're up in the education levels, and we're increasing our signage, and we're providing users with the information that they need to make informed decisions. And it's really up to them moving forward how they want to take care of this place.
Okay, great. Well, we have about 8 minutes left, or not even, 7 minutes left. This goes by quickly. So I thank you so much for filling us in about the mud meter. It looks beautiful, by the way. There's a picture of it on page 5, again, of the Soper Sun, but you can go check it out. You know, you're certainly welcome to, even if it, and today might be a day where maybe there would be an appropriate place to hike.
Yeah, absolutely. I would hope that right now it looks like it's green on Ruthie's, and I would imagine it's either on a yellow or a red setting for the Blue Ribbon and Three Gulch routes. And if you were to start hiking the first quarter mile, it's probably dry. But as soon as you get around the corner into the shade, it's going to be muddy and nasty and sticky, and there's going to be snow, and it's not the appropriate time to hike if you're leaving a track. Turn back.
Yeah, I love that saying. If you see a track, turn back.
Yeah.
And that is something to live by anywhere you're hiking, not just Red Hill.
Yeah.
So before I let you go with our last 6 minutes, could you tell us a little bit? Last year it was in the news about some vandalism that happened up at Red Hill, and that also was just really disrespectful because it jeopardize the work that people have been doing for months before that, a lot of hours.
Right. And so in the spring of 2023, we had a lot of volunteer work parties with RFOV, Roaring Fork Outdoor Volunteers, mm-hmm. volunteers. And we made a concerted effort to narrow or consolidate the Mushroom Rock Trail, closing off some of the social braids or bandit routes and making it clear that there's one central trail, and trying to encourage people to stay to that corridor. And then we invested a lot of time, upwards of 250 to 350 hours of volunteer time, reclaiming those areas off the trail, spreading woody material, needles, needle duff, rocks, all that stuff to again, make that go away. And I think in the spring of, or the winter of 2024, we discovered that a lot of that had been removed by an individual or a couple of individuals that would have invested a pretty significant amount of work to do that destruction. And it was really unfortunate.
Yeah, really unfortunate. So, and are there plans to do some mitigation work to remedy that?
Yes, we have four work days planned with RFOV this coming season, 2025. And we will be having a restoration repair project this fall, I think September or October, where we'll be reclaiming some more of those areas, redistributing the woody debris, and actually laying down some native seed. So hopefully we'll see some extra vegetation growth in the coming years.
And how great to have an organization like Roaring Fork Outdoor Volunteers that specializes in that ethical trail maintenance.
Yeah, absolutely. We wouldn't be able to organize these groups of volunteers without their help. They're critical to our success.
Well, thank you so much again for joining us. We do have a few minutes left. Is there anything else percolating that you might want to share with our listeners?
Well, keep your eyes open. And in the coming months, we'll probably revisit our poop flagging project. That's kind of a fun one if you're into that type of thing. But we put a pin flag everywhere we see a pile of dog poop. And we're trying to raise awareness of that problem which is people not picking up after their animals.
And that this will be the third year in a row that y'all are doing that.
This will be the third year in a row, and we're measuring the total flags to see if we're making an impact on the community.
Great. And there, as you said before the show, there has been some improvement.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been seeing it come down maybe 80 to 100 between the first year and the second year. You know, what was it, 600, 700, something like that?
Right, down close to 700,
you know, upper 500s, yeah. So.
Yeah, down to the 500s. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fantastic. Yeah, and I remember that cover in the Soper Sun, poop, there it is.
Yeah, poop, there it is. Yeah.
Well, yeah. That's so great. And thank you again for just being up there. And I, It's of course, and again, Red Hill Council is all volunteer based.
Absolutely, 100% volunteer.
So you do that out of goodwill and care for these trails.
Yeah, I mean, it gives us so much. It's all that we can do. The least we can do is give a little back.
Absolutely. Well, great. We really appreciate your time again, Chris, joining us today on Everything Under the Sun. I certainly have enjoyed my time up on the Red Hill Trails in the past, and I'm going to make and be diligent to be respectful going forward. Yesenia, have you gotten up to the Red Hill Trails anytime?
I usually do go. I haven't gone this winter.
Okay. Are you excited to check out the new mud meter?
Yes.
Okay. And I'll be certain if I'm up there and trail's too muddy, I'll mark it. And you heard it, folks, from Chris, the Red Hill Council. If you leave a track, or if you see a track, turn back.
Yeah, if you're leaving a track, turn back. That's the motto.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Chris, again for joining us today. Could you give everyone just the website for Red Hill Council before we let you go?
Sure. You can find us at redhillcouncil.org, or you can find us on Instagram or Facebook, Friends of Red Hill.
Fantastic. Well, you heard it, folks. And thank you for today for staying tuned to Everything Under the Sun. Thank you, Yesenia, for again being on the board.
Of course.
And if you haven't, head on down, grab a copy of the Soapris Sun at the nearest yellow newspaper stand, and enjoy this sunshiny day. And if you are recreating at Red Hill, do so responsibly and check out the muddy meter before you get up there. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.